did it. Page 51. Oh, how love I thy law. It is ever with me. It is my meditation all the day in my thoughts. I have held back my feet from the ways of this world. Wisdom, righteous commands. Oh, how love I thy law. It is ever with me. I have more understanding than the ancients of old. From thy precepts I learn every false way to hate. I have more understanding, for I dwell on thy law. Oh, how love I thy law. It is ever with me. My commands make me wiser than my unfriendly foes. Oh, how sweet are thy words, more than honey is sweet. Perfect eternal, let me never depart. Now,
the title of this message is The Three Resurrections, and my wife has something that she's going to pass around in a few minutes. But I want to start off by mentioning the thing about the three resurrections. The greatest victory in the history of mankind, you know, is not the battle of whatever battle you might mention. It's actually the resurrection of Jesus Christ. By the way, that is a historically well-established fact. It's one of the most well-established facts in ancient history. Because a lot of people don't know that. It really is very well established, and it turned the world upside down. And Christianity still has a great effect on the world. I was just thinking of something the other day. I was thinking, when we get to the world tomorrow, the millennium and the great white throne judgment, and everybody's taught the truth, and they're taught such things as when Christ says to love your enemies, love those that despitefully use you. Now think about a world where so-and-so said something bad about me, and I don't like him. And maybe on his side, he says, I never didn't like them because of whatever. And they both go to church every Sabbath, and they're taught that they should love the guy they don't like. Think of what a world that's going to be when people who don't like each other are trying to show love to each other, as opposed to now, I'm going to get back at you. Well, we could talk about the violence in this world, but, you know, it's going to be amazing, the wonderful world that's coming. And Christianity has had an impact on the world, even though it's still Satan's society. I want to mention where you can get the literature that we base much of this sermon on. If you go to www.intercontinentalcog.org, that's it stands for Intercontinental, COG is Church of God, .org, that's for, you know, usually, nonprofit organizations get that moniker on the web. And you'll come up the church's website. And then there's a little search engine window. You type in resurrection, push the button, boom. We have a ton of literature on it. But the first item is a correspondence course on the resurrections. And the reason I'm mentioning that, so it gets on the tape, because hundreds of people will probably see this in China and all kinds of faraway places. You can go to the internet and pull up a lot of stuff. I just want to mention that at this point in time. Okay, we're going to go to 1 Corinthians 15. The entire chapter is great for the resurrection. We're only going to cover some of it this afternoon, but let's go to 1 Corinthians 15, the resurrection chapter. We've talked about it in the past, how you're going to go from those who are part of the first resurrection, from mortal to immortal, and it's going to be wonderful. But let's go to 1 Corinthians 15, verse 21 to 23, because there's certain expressions here that we'd like to elucidate, explain, and clarify so that you could maybe put it in the leaf of your Bible, and someday you could maybe explain it to somebody else. Because that's the goal, that we know it well enough that we can understand it maybe even explain it to somebody else, and even defend it against attacks. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 21. For since by man, he means Adam, and came death, by man came also the resurrection of dead. For as in Adam all die, even so in Christ shall all be made alive. I want to emphasize the word all. In other words, everybody is going to get resurrected in Jesus Christ. Verse 23 is the key verse we want to emphasize. Verse 23, 1 Corinthians 15. But every man in his own order. There's an order. It's not everybody resurrected all at once. There's an order. And we're going to explain that order. As I say, you can go to the church website in the correspondence course. And I think my wife has some stuff to hand out that will help explain and elucidate all these things. Verse 23. But every man in his own order. Christ, the first fruits, afterwards they that are Christ at his coming. Now, when it says Christ the first fruits, let me explain what happened in ancient Israel. On the Sabbath between the 2 days of unleavened bread, of course, you know, the Passover is part of that period, which is all part of it. You know, the blood of the Lamb cleanses us from sin. But before the Israelites could eat any of the first barley crop, they were supposed to take a wave sheaf, you know, just kind of a wave sheaf kind of tied together. And by the way, the calendar helped them, and the crops and all helped them stay in season. So it kind of all worked together. So they were to take this crop, and after the Sabbath, the next day, they would take it to the high priest and had a ceremony called the wave sheaf offering, where the first of the first fruits were accepted by God. Then, of course, then they could eat, you know, we might call it the winter harvest or the first harvest. Then it also started a count of 50. And by the way, 50 is a special number in the Bible. 50 is the Jubilee year. Let me just go through it a little bit. Most of you know it, but just a brief reminder. You had 7 years of seven, and every 7 years, debts were released. And you know, you didn't pile up so much poverty. Every 7 years, all debts were released. But on the, and you had the land, Sabbath, etc. But on the 50th year, everybody got all their freedoms, as well as all land went back to the original family, no matter what. So you wouldn't have these gigantic estates by the super rich and the people who messed up because they made bad business deals, had bad misfortune. It went back to the original families. In other words, the Jubilee year was a year of release, a year of freedom, a year of special celebration. And so God is very numerical. And he does things in order. So you started a count of 50 from that wave sheaf. You count it 7 weeks and one more day. And that's called Pentecost. It means count 50 in Greek. It's also the feast of the first fruits. God does everything perfectly. His timing is perfect. Christ died in spite of what a guy in his 500-page book is still telling us. Christ died exactly when the official Lamb of Israel was supposed to die. And then a few hours later, the Jews ate the first Passover with the blood of the Lamb protecting them, of course, symbolically, that is. Of course, in actual reality, of course, it's really the blood of Christ. And they'll all get into that in the future when they accept the Messiah. And then God's church is the first fruits church. By the way, if God was doing away with his holy day, you know, when Christ left his disciples, you read about it in the first chapter of the book of Acts, he could have said, I'm going to empower you right now with special power. No, he told them to wait in Jerusalem. They waited 10 days after Christ went up to heaven on a cloud until the holy day, Pentecost, because God does things timing correct. So Jesus Christ was resurrected to fulfill the wave sheaf offering. And when he was there, and you can read about this in the most of you are familiar with it, in the Gospels, He told Mary and the others, don't hold me, don't touch me. I have not yet ascended to the Father. In other words, he had been resurrected from the grave. By the way, they had a Roman detachment of soldiers to guard him so that they couldn't steal his body because they wanted to prevent him from being resurrected. But, of course, the Roman soldiers couldn't stop that, obviously. He was resurrected, but he says, I have not yet fulfilled the wave sheaf offering ceremony of the first fruits, who is Jesus Christ, going before the Father. So he went to heaven to fulfill that typology, came back down and visited with his disciples for 40 days. And then on Pentecost, he poured out the Spirit to empower his church for the first fruits. Because we, his church, we are the first of the first fruits. And Christ was the very first of the first fruits. He was the wave sheaf offering. Okay, going back to 1 Corinthians 15 again. Now, this is one of the false doctrines that have popped up in Corinth, a hotbed of problems for Paul. Verse 12. Now, if Christ be preached that he rose from the dead, and that is, of course, what the New Testament church did preach, that Christ rose from the dead, how say some among you there is no resurrection of the dead? I can't even imagine how they came up with that false doctrine. But you know how false doctrines are. They seem to pop out of nowhere or someone's imagination. But if there be no resurrection of the dead, then is Christ not risen? And if Christ be not risen, then our preaching is in vain and your faith also is in vain. So everything in Christianity revolves around the resurrection of Jesus Christ. It was the greatest victory in the world, and it's the start of something. And it is the key. Let's go to John 5. Remember what we said, everyone in their own order. And we're going to briefly explain that order today. John 5, verse 25. John 5, 25. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the hour is coming, and now is, when the dead shall hear the voice of the Son of God, and they shall live. Not that they're alive, you know, running around in hell or floating away in heaven. No, they're sleeping. They're in the grave. But the day is coming when they will hear the voice, and they shall live again. For as the Father has life in himself, so hath he given to the Son to have life in himself. In other words, you know, man, science cannot produce life. They can put all kinds of molecules that are similar to life, and they can even chop up stuff and do all kinds of stuff. Unlike the Frankenstein movie, you know, where Frankenstein pulled the lightning switch and lightning made a dead body come to life. It doesn't work. With all the power of science, they do a lot of great science. They can mess with genes and all kinds of stuff. They cannot bring dead things back to life. They can't create life. But God and Jesus Christ can. Have life in himself. Verse 27. I've given him authority to execute judgment also because he is the Son of God. And by the way, this judgment, Jesus Christ is going to determine who is in which resurrection, either the resurrection to spiritual life, to physical life, or for some wicked people, they're going to be resurrected to the lake of fire. That judgment is in Jesus Christ's hands. We don't really have to worry about whether it's righteous, whether we understand it all. I mean, I think we understand it reasonably well, but Jesus' judgment is perfect. He'll know who is incorrigibly wicked and would be better off. Our church literature calls it a mercy killing. If someone's incorrigibly wicked, like maybe Dr. Mengele, who enjoyed torturing little children. I mean, he was a sadist, and did, you've probably heard about him. Or Adolf Hitler or Judas, you know. And then I'm sure there are many other incorrigibly wicked people. Well, if they're that perverted, or that Manson guy who looks weird, you know, the one that did all those killings in California. If they don't get straightened out, I mean, obviously Christ will make the decision, they're better off dead than living forever and ever, causing themselves and the rest of us trouble. Think about it. It's a mercy killing them, putting them out of their misery and all their hate and ugliness. But those decisions will be made by Jesus Christ, and his judgment will be perfect. Verse 28, Marvel not at this, for the hour is coming in which all, I want to emphasize the word A-L-L, all, A-L-L, all that are in the grave shall hear his voice and shall come forth. They that have done good unto the resurrection of life, and they that have done evil unto the resurrection of damnation. We're going to go into a few details in a minute, but the followers of Jesus Christ will have our names written in the book of life, and we will forego the second death. We will be immortal. We'll never die again. We'll be spirit beings, and it'll be wonderful. Most people haven't had a chance to really worship God in spirit and truth. They don't really understand the Bible. The devil has deceived the world. God will give them a chance, and the vast majority will make it into God's family. But those that remain incorrigibly wicked, and Christ will make the judgment, they'll be resurrected to go into the lake of fire. Now, before we get into more of the details, I just want to tell you this story. This guy is digging deep underground, and his little shovel hits something hard, and he pulls away. There's this gigantic jar, and he looks in the jar, and there's a genie, and the genie looks kind of mean and ugly. And the genie is making noises, and genie says, I want you to let me out. I want to be resurrected from this horrible sealed-in jar grave. I can't get through it. The guy looks at this genie, you look a little scary to me. I don't know if I want to let you out. The genie says, I will give you 3 gifts if you let me out. The guy says, okay, what gifts will you give me? Well, he says, if you open this jar, I'm going to give you a liquid which will heal all your sicknesses. Secondly, I'm going to give you a large diamond. And lastly, since you're a guy, I'm going to give you a date with a female movie star. The guy thinks about it. He says, okay, it's hard to get that jar off his big, tough lid. But he screws it off. The genie pops out with a laugh, and he runs off. The guy goes home. The next morning, UPS comes, and they bring him this gigantic super barrel of Campbell's chicken noodle soup. He says, it wasn't exactly what he expected. Then he gets a telegram from Western Union. And he reads a telegram. A distant cousin died who owned a very, 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 very minor league baseball team, and he's inherited a baseball field. Wait for it. Wait for it. He says, what's this third one going to be? Then he gets a telephone call from MGM Studio. He's hoping for the best. And they said, your name was pulled out of a blank mailing list, and you won an afternoon with one of our big stars. Lassie. Lassie, okay. So the point of that story, if there is a point, is he did not understand his rewards, and it didn't work out so well for him. But we're going to try to understand the rewards of the 3 resurrections today. And so what message did Peter and Paul preach? Did they preach an ever-burning hellfire and sitting on clouds looking at the beatific vision and being bored for all eternity? No, they preached the resurrection. We're going to just look at a few verses, but there are many more. Let's go to 1 Peter 1:3. And I can just imagine the wonderful description that Peter and Paul and John and the others gave of what it's going to be like. And remember, we read the other day when we were talking about birth pangs, we read Romans 8 and how Paul said how wonderful it's going to be when we are born again. Do you remember those? Well, let's go to 1 Peter 1:3. Just the idea, this is what the apostles preached. Blessed be God, the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, which according to his abundant mercy has begotten us again unto a lively hope. And what lively hope are we looking for? Our lively hope, 1 Peter 1:3, is our lively hope by the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. to an inheritance incorruptible. That's like being Superman. You can't be hurt. You can't be corrupted. Undefiled, and it fades not away, reserved in heaven for you. And those positions are reserved for us. My wife and I were just discussing this coming. We'll get to the scriptures in a minute. It says, like Revelation 5:10 and Revelation 20, we're going to mention in a few minutes, that mention we're going to reign and rule with Jesus Christ in the millennium. And she says, well, will we have these high positions forever? I thought about it for a minute. We already know that the 12 apostles will rule the 12 tribes of Israel, and they'll be major power centers, and David will be the king of Israel. And I can only imagine, we can speculate for a minute, that there'll be a super committee with God, and Abraham will be on that committee, probably so will Daniel. And who's going to run the Gentile world? I can see Daniel and Paul. In other words, the men that God has known the most, who went through the toughest times, and some other saints that we don't know as well, but you know, did great things for God through the centuries, the God that braved the most difficult world, where those who come later, it'll be a lot easier because there's no devil. I just can't see God someday saying, David, now that all this stuff is over, I'm demoting you way, way, way back in the ranks, and you're not going to, I'll see you every now and then, but you're not going to be that important. Same with you, Abraham. Same with you, Moses. Same with you, Daniel. Same with you, Paul. I don't see that. It is not logical. Those men will be at closest to God's ruling family, near the top forever and ever. And we will be up there, too. Now, we won't be as high as Daniel or Moses. I'm not that stupid. But because we're in the first resurrection, we'll be, relatively speaking, up there high. Because it's going to be billions of people who will not be in the first resurrection. So, and we will go through a much tougher program to get where we are. Because we have to qualify. I'm not saying we earn our salvation. I'm not implying that. But we have to stay faithful. That's what I mean. We have to qualify in Satan's world. It's much tougher when everybody is not doing it. So we're going to get a higher position. And I'm just saying the first resurrection is the best resurrection. I want to emphasize that because sometimes you might forget it when we're going through this. If you went to Acts 17, 18, 17, 32, 24, 14, and 15, you'll see the Apostle Paul pushing the resurrection and preaching it all over the empire. But let's go to Romans 6, 5. Can't go over everything, but I want to go to Romans 6, 5, regarding the resurrection that was preached by Peter, Paul, John, and all the apostles. Romans 6, 5. For if we have been planted together in the likeness of his death, we shall be also in the likeness of his resurrection. So if Christ's resurrection was one of the greatest victories of mankind, we will share that in our resurrection, or if we remain till the end, at the last trump, the twinkling of an eye. I was listening to a TV program. It was not a bad program. And it was all based on a movie on the rapture. And the guy quoted, you know, 1 Thessalonians 4 and another scripture about the trump of God. He said, see, that proves a secret rapture. The man didn't really understand. If you read those verses, the trump of God is like a gigantic blaring trumpet the whole world's going to hear. It's not a secret rapture. And I understand that they don't know the truth, so I'm not being overly critical. I'm just saying that because he doesn't understand the trumps of God in Revelation, and he doesn't keep the holy days, realize the Feast of Trumpets. You know, when it says the holy days are a shadow of things to come, that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. They're a key to the future, just like they were a key to understanding the past. And we will follow Christ in the great resurrection when that trump is sounded. Let's go to Revelation 20. Revelation 20. We'll pick it up in verse 5. As you already know from the previous verses, the devil and Babylon the Great and the beast have been defeated, and the devil is locked up in the bottomless pit, the opening of which is a lake of fire. So he's locked away. Now in Revelation 20, verse 5, But the rest of the dead live not again until the 1,000 years were finished. In other words, there's another resurrection coming. This is, but this is the first resurrection. Blessed and holy is he that has part in the first resurrection. In other words, it's a good thing. It's a wonderful thing. It's a blessed thing to be in the first resurrection. We, the first fruits, will be in the first resurrection. We're going to be in the first resurrection. And just hang in there. Don't fall away. Don't get discouraged. Don't fall for false doctrines. Don't worship a man or someone in his own little private group. Hang faithful. You know, try and obey God as best we can. And we will be in that first resurrection, the blessed resurrection. But the very fact that it says first resurrection tells you there have to be a second. Because you wouldn't say the first world war unless there was a second. Matter of fact, the first world war was always called the Great War. Until we had the second world war, then they named it the first world war because we then had a second. You all understand if you got first, there's got to be a second. That's the point I'm making. Because sometimes you might forget that. If there's a first resurrection, there has to be a second or it doesn't make sense. Anyway, blessed and holy. It's a big deal to make that first resurrection. As I said, we'll be at the top of God's family. We'll be closest to God. Even God might reorganize and adjust things, but I think we'll still more or less be in the closer inner circle. And it'll be, as you said, it's blessed and holy. It's he that has part in the first resurrection. On such the second death has no power, but they shall be priests of God and of Christ and shall reign. That means rule. That means you're going to be the leader. You're going to be the manager. You're going to be the governor or whatever other such titles are appropriate. With him 1,000 years. And that's the first resurrection. It's the resurrection of the saints. By the way, the word saints, when you think of saint, you think of someone who's super spiritual and up in heaven. But actually the word saints, as used by the New Testament, just means Christians, New Testament Christians that exist in this first period. We are the saints. I know if you tell somebody I'm a saint, you know, they laugh at you, bad as you are. But technically, by the way, the Bible uses the word saints. We are saints, and the saints will be resurrected in the first resurrection. Let's go to the second resurrection, which is called the Great White Throne Resurrection. And if you were to go to Ezekiel 37, you'll see it described. We mentioned that earlier. We talked in Ezekiel about how your teachers will be behind you, and the world will be a controlled atmosphere where evil will not be allowed to exist. Satan will be locked up. And then there's the Great White Throne Judgment. It's a resurrection to physical life. For instance, I've often used example of my grandparents, but Natalie's great-grandparents and her parents are probably fitting this well. My grandfather and grandmother were really good, humble, hardworking people. They did what they thought was right. You know, they listened to the Baptist preacher. Anyway, I won't go into how nice they were, but they really were nice, humble people. People like that, when they're resurrected in a perfect world where everybody will know God, the knowledge of God will be like water at the bottom of the ocean. You want to have to tell someone, know the Lord, everyone will know him. How long do you think it will take us for them to make God's kingdom? Probably not that long. I think they'll get their name in the book of life rather quickly. Now, some people who are more perverted and evil, and there are a lot of weird, evil sickles out there, like the guy in Connecticut, it's probably going to take a number of years of work with him to get himself together. Hopefully, he will get himself together and eventually qualify for God's kingdom. I mean, they're still going to make it on the grace of Christ, but they're going to have to get rid of a certain amount of the evil, and you know what I mean when I say that. And the vast majority of those people will make it. Now, there's a short period where those who don't make it get tested by the devil, and then they get burned up if they let the devil deceive them. But I'm assuming the vast majority in that controlled atmosphere will go to salvation. And that's the second resurrection. It is a physical resurrection to give people a chance. So let's go ahead and read Revelation 20, verse 11 and 12. I saw a great white throne. This is the second resurrection. And him that sat on it, from whose face the earth and heaven fled away, there was no place found for them. And I saw the dead. Now, these are dead people coming back to life now, small and great. In other words, the powerful and the peasants. And we can look at Isaiah 65:20, and other places for a few more details. We stand before God, and the books were opened. By the way, books means Bible. Biblios, actually the Greek for Bible is biblios. It means books, plural. And we anglicize it the word Bible. But that's what biblios means. It means books. You know, the books that are the Old Testament and the books that have become the New Testament. It simply means God is going to open the Bible to people. The books were open. The Bible exists, but the Bible is written in such a way, God has allowed it to be this way for his own purposes, that it's easy to misunderstand if he doesn't call you. I mean, they understand some of it. I'm not saying that people who read the Bible don't get any. They get positive things out of it. I don't mean that. But a lot of the deeper key secrets, they don't see. Well, that's going to be over. In the great white throne, be no more deception, no more devil. God will open the Bible. I can just imagine people saying, I thought I understood the Bible. I thought I did. And now it's so clear. Look at what he said in Romans. And I believe, you know, they'll talk about how they didn't want to. The Sabbath law was done away and whatever other misunderstandings they have. People are going to be amazed at the new truth they're going to learn. One guy used to joke, he said, a lot of people who've been preaching the Bible but incorrectly, they're going to say, I saw that sign in heaven, PC, I thought it meant preach Christ, it really means plow corn. They'll say, I think I should be a farmer. But all joking aside, the Bible will be open to people. And another book was opened, which is the Book of Life. And a lot of people will qualify. I think some will qualify sooner than others. But, you know, Christ will make the judgment, and his judgment will be perfect. And they were judged out of those things which are written in the books. That means the Bible. They'll have to learn, you know, the Bible according to their works. Not that they're earning their salvation, it's still, but they've got to learn to try to obey the Bible and get God's law in their hearts, as we talked about in Hebrews 8 and Jeremiah 31. God, the new covenant is writing God's law in our hearts, in our minds. That doesn't sound like doing away with the law, does it? You've got to write it in their hearts and their minds. It certainly doesn't. And I know the world will understand that then. Now let's go to the third resurrection, because and means something else happens. And the sea gave up the dead, which were in it, death and hell just means the grave, delivered up the dead that were in them. In other words, the dead on land or sea, and they were judged, every man according to their works. Death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. And whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. In other words, some people are going to be resurrected, and they're going to find out their name is not written in the book of life. One of our teachers, you know, we had a little discussion at Ambassador College. Said, well, why is God going to resurrect some people just to toss them in the lake of fire? I think God wants people to know their final judgment. There are some evil people who probably died fighting God, cooperating with the devil, doing really evil, evil stuff. But in their perverted, twisted mind, they thought they were right. It's even possible Hitler thought he was right. I know that sounds like a stretch. He actually, toward the end, he said, the German soldiers, the German people didn't deserve me because they didn't win the war. I mean, you know how perverted some people are. And I don't know who the wicked will be. I'm just going to make a guess. People like Hitler, Judas, and some of the other really wicked people, they're going to be resurrected just to find out, that's the third resurrection, that they're going into the lake of fire. And there are some people from this era who will turn evil, who had a chance to make God's kingdom but turn evil. They're going to be resurrected to go in the lake of fire. We have to assume God's judgment is perfect, so it's a mercy killing. Let's go to Malachi 4:3. There are many verses that say this, that, you know, the baptism of fire for people that are wicked is mentioned in the Bible. But let's go to Malachi 4:3 and see the ultimate fate of the wicked. because Malachi sums it up very nicely. Malachi 4, verse 3. Malachi 4, 3. And you shall tread down the wicked, for they shall be ashes under the soles of your feet in that day that I shall do this, says the Lord God of hosts. Then he talks about remembering the law of Moses. In other words, ultimately, the third resurrection is for those that would burn to ashes. It's a mercy killing. And by the way, they're not going to suffer forever and ever and ever and ever. Ashes. How long do you think a lake of fire is like molten lava, something of that nature? If you fall into that, how long do you think it'll turn you to turn to ashes when the fire is over? Maybe 5 seconds, 7 seconds, 8 seconds. Won't be long, and you'll be gone. I mean, that's it. I imagine as they see the lake of fire coming close for a few minutes, that'll probably be the worst of it, knowing their fate. But it'll be over soon. God is merciful. Now, if we stay the course, those of us who have an opportunity for the best resurrection, the first resurrection, if we stay the course, we're going to reign with Jesus Christ. But we do face the greatest risk of being deceived because we're in Satan's world. So I want to just end this message of the three resurrections by saying, be strong, stay true. And by the way, Daniel 12, 3 and 4 talks about those who make God's kingdom will shine as stars. So I want to just say, be strong, stay true, and be a star.